Hi, everybody. My name is Leila Yagi, and I'm the mother of Ziad Yagi. And my son, when he was 18 years old, he used to live in Texas, and he came back to North Carolina to stay with me. And he met a guy by the name Boyd. He's an older guy. And he met him just like for about, he knew him probably maximum a month, okay? And then he went on to Jordan. He was interested in knowing, you know, his heritage and where we came from and stuff like that, because we came from Jordan. So he also wanted to get married. He was only 18 at the time, and he was not that serious about getting married, but he was looking for a wife. And he came back, and the FBI started harassing him, and asking him questions, and harassing him, asking him questions. Of course, we really didn't know why, so we thought, you know, we're Americans and nothing's going to happen. We didn't take it seriously. And my son, you know, started giving them an attitude. They wanted to know about this guy. His name is Boyd. They wanted to know more information about Boyd just because my son knew him for a very short while. And my son kept saying he doesn't know anything about him. And not like this guy, Boyd, is a bad guy or anything. I mean, we don't really know anything about him, but he was talking against the war. And he's an American white Muslim, so he's talking about the war, and he's talking about a little bit probably about jihad, I'm not sure, but he was talking things. He's a little bit off also. So the FBI started following us, me and my son, and then my son went back to Jordan the next year, and he went with his friend. They're planning on, you know, sightseeing and visiting family members. His friend is from Egypt. She showed his picture up there, Omar. And also we're on Facebook. And so my son went to Jordan, probably for a week, stayed there, and then went to Egypt. And they stayed probably a month, and then they both also came back. And the FBI also harassed us, kept following us, taking pictures of me going to work and coming back. I have a really boring life. I just go to work and come back. I'm an introvert, so, you know, I stay home most of the time. So all of the things that you hear about secret evidence and all that stuff is basically pages and pages and pages and pages of me, okay, going to work and coming back, of me playing with my grandson, of my son just playing basketball, or very, very silly things, okay? So then at the end, they had an informant, okay, following Boyd, and he pretended that he, I don't know if he's a Muslim or not, he pretended like he's his friend, he was eating at his house, going with him at his job, staying with the family and whatever. And he was, of course, you know, the way they're very, very tricky, they start asking good questions and whatever, and then they take record you and they get all hyped up, and I guess Boyd started talking a little bit about jihad, I'm not even sure, you know, and he had like 700 tapes of that on him. Of course, now my son is not on any of these tapes, so the FBI couldn't get anything on my son, nothing whatsoever. He's not on any of these tapes, but they're upset at my son because they basically want him to lie. They want us to lie against Boyd. They want us to say something about him, which we really don't know what they want us to say about the guy. So they kept asking me questions like, I don't know anything about the guy. They're not believing me. They're asking my son, he's like, I don't know what you guys want me to say. So at the end, after 2 years and a half of my son coming back from Jordan, okay, and his friend, they're planning on going kickboxing or something. Of course, that was terror related, okay, because my son went to go football, but I'm like a mom, you know, moms get scared. And it's like, no, please don't go football, you know, I'm so worried about you. You know, being pushed or injuries or something like that, so I encouraged him to go to kickboxing. So that became, he was, what do you call it? Organizing for jihad or whatever, like everything became jihad, it's so stupid. Okay, so then I go, some old lady cousins, like, she doesn't drive, so she's like, please, can you please help me, you know, go to the doctor's office or something. I say, okay. My son, meanwhile, he's cleaning up the house for me, wants to surprise me. I'm out the kitchen, marinated the chicken, and then he went to take a swim, went to swim at the pool. And a SWAT team comes, okay, a whole SWAT team. This is all about the media and showing people that, you know, there's terrorists in the United States, which I really doubt. that there is. Okay, so they want to keep, you know, people scared because of the economy, and they want people to be focused on something different than the economy and the wars that are going on overseas. So they're using my son as a scapegoat. So they come, a whole SWAT team comes and picks up an innocent, young, 21-year-old, unarmed child from the pool. Okay, and I heard, the way I heard it was very inhumane the way they treated my son. Okay, and they put him in jail. He was 2 years in jail, 2 years and 3 months in jail. They were trying to get him to plead guilty and testify against Boyd. Of course, my son doesn't lie, and I don't lie, so we're not going to go lie against other people. So what happened? They pressured the one that they called the ringleader, Boyd, to testify against my son and plead guilty and testify against my son because they have to prove that they're right. They don't want to prove that they made a mistake or that they're wrong. So, They convinced Boyd, under duress, of course, he was in lockdown for 2.3 years, on lockdown, so they convinced him that if he testifies against the others, that his charges would be dropped, a lot of his charges. He had so many charges against him, and that they would be dropped, and probably just leaving too, and that his sons wouldn't be in a much, much better deal, of course. So he testified against my son. Of course, you know, there was really nothing that he could testify. They kept playing the tape recordings of Boyd. Okay, the 700 hours, was it? Or 700 hours. And of course, none of them, my son is on any, not on any of them, but the jury, that they handpicked the jury, they were very, I'm sorry, I mean, old people. Most of them were white, who are uninformed, uneducated. Don't know anything about Muslims, and they gave them scripts because the tape recording wasn't clear at all, and it was very, very boring, so even some of the jury were falling asleep. So you couldn't understand even what Boyd is saying. So what they do, the prosecutors, what they did, they did the jury's transcripts, and they filled in the words from them what Boyd was saying, okay? So this is like very, very sick, okay? So then while they're putting the tape recordings of Boyd, they're putting my son's picture up and keep on saying, like, the United States versus Ziad. So, you know, of course, the jury, like I said, you know, they're uninformed, and when they hear the United States versus Ziad, they're going to think something big. And they couldn't really come up with anything against my son because there wasn't, but, you know, they had some people that they scared that really don't even know my son come and say, like, he's an extremist. And when Boyd testified against my son, there wasn't really much for him to say. So when he was cross-examined, he said there wasn't any conspiracy going on with him or my son. And there was no such thing, and on and on and on. But still, the jury convicted him, okay, sadly. And now he's serving 2.5 years for basically doing nothing illegal. He did not harm anybody. He did not do anything wrong. And you know, and you could, and I told, like, I wrote a letter to the judge. Could you listen to his tape recordings when he was talking to me? Because everything is tape recorded. How can say, I don't even know why I'm in jail? I didn't do anything wrong. So now he's serving 31.5 years. He's in something worse than even solitary confinement. They moved him to Florida. He's in something called the shoe, you know, which is basically, I guess, in a basement or something. And he only gets to go out 1 hour a day. I don't think it's even in the sunlight. Just probably to shower. He's not allowed to come except once a month. So this is what happened to us. This is our story. We didn't really have any support. Probably a handful of people who came to court. People need to understand that all this thing, you know, that goes on in the media, it's all lies. It's not true. They're just trying to get the, you know, the wars to keep going on in, you know, in Afghanistan, Iraq, probably now Iran, okay? So they want you to focus on young men who are not doing anything, basically. And of course, I'm suffering. I called, like, almost every organization possible you could imagine so I can get help for my son. And everybody kept saying, no, this is a criminal matter. I'm trying to understand what kind of crime has been committed for it to be a criminal matter. So everybody's just washing their hands off of us, and nobody wants to help us. And you're suffering, you know. Every day, I mean, it's like a battle for me just to get up and go to work because I'm so exhausted, I'm tired thinking about my son's condition. Like, I'm college educated, I'm working in a restaurant because my mental status is not doing that good, so I can't really focus on all the space out. So, we're not doing good financially either. I'm trying to get him a private lawyer, but the down payment's like $50,000. So it's almost impossible, like, for somebody who doesn't make that much money to get a lawyer. Every time, like, I come to speak also, I have to take time off of work so I can come and speak. And I travel basically a lot of places, but I don't see hers really doing any good. And mostly, also, it's about the money. So we need your support as much as possible. We need people to stick with us. We need people to support us. We need to get a private lawyer for him, tell your neighbors. Just come to events like this and help us out.
Can you tell us a little bit about the show?
Yeah.
Another family.
Yeah, their brother was a co-defendant. He got 45 years. And he said
45?
45 years. And he
isn't he very young? Like your son?
He's 27 probably, yeah. He also is a co-defendant of my son. Basically, you know, they said that they were conspiring with each other. My son doesn't even know that co-defendant. We only met each other basically in court. I only met these families in court. And also the same thing, he was a co-defendant with my son, and they said that he was talking about jihad and whatever, and you could barely hear that guy. He was on tapes, but you could barely hear anything he was saying. He probably was just nodding or saying, yeah. Like the informant was saying something, and he was just saying, yeah, yeah. That's all, basically. That's how they got me to. And they put him 45 years in jail. And then after that, his brother was speaking out for him. We went to Washington, me and him, in separate cars, of course, and his sisters. And we spoke over there. There was an assembly going on. And then just a week after that, they arrested his brother, saying that he wanted to behead the informants. It's like so, so weird. Honestly, it's just like, so it's crazy.
But the pattern that's happened post 9/11, attacking the Muslim South Asian community, continuing to do racial profiling in the African American community, but what happens is you're put in detention. This is the standard operating procedure. Put them in detention, torture them in solitary. Let's not delude ourselves. Torturing is to break their spirit so that they will take a deal. And this is now the pattern. And so it feels beyond infuriating that this is going on in our country. But one of the things, Nelson, you said last week or the week before last is this isn't an exception. This is becoming the habit. This is becoming the norm. And are we going to allow this to happen or not? It's a matter of it's happening. It has happened. Part of what Nelson was talking about was people thinking about Trayvon Martin case like it's someplace else. It's also here. And that's, so our sadness, our rage, our grief, we have to figure out ways to translate to action.